What changes can the chemical industry expect from so-called REACH 2.0, the European Commission's new chemical strategy?
You can see that the way we produce chemicals today, plus the chemicals that we do produce, are not the ones that is going to help us meet climate neutrality nor circularity.
Welcome to this special ICIS Chemicals podcast, where today we'll take a deep dive into some major new European chemicals legislation, which some are calling REACH 2.0. Talk about good timing. In the midst of the world's worst depression-like downturn, regulators in Europe have unveiled the Chemicals Strategy for Sustainability, which includes around 70 regulatory or legal measures. The chemical industry here can look forward to the REACH regulation being strengthened. The aim is to improve enforcement and take a more hazard-based or generic assessment of risk. It will also ban whole groups of substances rather than individual substances. And I'm really pleased today to welcome Bjorn Hansen, who's Director General of the European Chemicals Agency. Now, this is the body which gives scientific opinions and guidance to regulators, industry and IT tools for REACH and other regulations in Europe as well. So I'd start off, Bjorn. You said last week that without a flourishing chemical industry in Europe, there'll be no manufacturing industry. And the chemical industry is worried that raising the bar in Europe even higher will wound the industry here and drive chemicals manufacture out of the region. What do you think about these fears?
Thanks a lot, Will, and I'm very, very happy to be here on the program. To your question, I can definitely understand the fears of industry, but we have to put it a bit into proportion. Chemicals legislation or raising the bar as such is not one of the big drivers in having chemicals industry move out of Europe. But it is clearly an issue for the industry that we have in Europe in terms of its competitiveness outside of Europe. So I'm not saying fear, there's no fear. I'm just saying we need to look at it in proportion. But in essence, I do see that the whole Green Deal, which is mapping out where we want to be in Europe in 2050, is in itself driving the necessity of finding and developing new chemicals. So different chemicals than we have today. So even without talking about raising the bar in terms of safety, just looking at climate neutrality in 2050 and looking at circularity, you can see that the way we produce chemicals today, plus the chemicals that we do produce, are not the ones that is going to help us meet climate neutrality nor circularity. And simply recognizing the fact that we need a significant deep change anyway does put a bit in proportion what it means to raising the bar. But finally, raising the bar, of course, we can't do in Europe without ensuring, first of all, that the chemicals that we produce will and can be used in Europe. And second of all, that whatever bar we raise in Europe will be equally applicable for all our imports. And this means we do need much stronger enforcement at the borders and within the union itself to ensure a well-functioning internal market. Without that enforcement, we cannot support our industry in adapting to a raised bar and the other conditions that the Green Deal puts on them.
Thank you. Just one point on competitiveness. The idea with REACH always was that it would be like a gold standard globally. Do you feel that other regions, other countries have taken REACH on board and that the bar is sort of being raised globally, so it won't impact Europe as badly as it could have, as it could?
Well, I think if you look at the global landscape, then there has been more and more REACH-like systems popping up around there with our trading partners. But this is, of course, embedded in a different world than was set, than we thought we would be in 15, 20 years ago. We thought we would be heading to a more and more global trade, more and more harmonized world in terms of standards and trade. And we're only seeing that partially. We're seeing in the politics, so way outside of my area of competence, but we are seeing that there are, say, tendencies of more looking at regional, looking at the world regionally rather than looking at it as one global market. And this in itself means that if you look at reach and it's spread around, then there are places where it's been developing, but it's not been across the board. And therefore, it's the competitiveness advantages that we were seeing 20 years ago when we started on the reach machinery, we haven't gotten to yet because the rest of the world hasn't gone exactly in the same direction.
And just listening to what you were saying earlier, it sounds like you're pretty optimistic that by raising the bar, it's going to drive innovation in chemistry. Is that right?
Not in itself, but I do think it's part of the toolbox to promote innovation. I mean, if you look very basically, then Europe is a very big market, and one of Europe's international strengths is its soft power in setting standards that the rest of the world follow, because they need to follow Europe's standards to be on the European market, and it's the European market is big enough to have everybody want to be on it. And once you're producing a product for the European market, you're not going to tailor that product differently anywhere else. So clearly, the European market as such does drive standards way beyond our borders. But by legislation alone in increasing the bar, I think the challenges that our chemicals industry faces for 2050 under the Green Deal, and here I add again, climate neutrality and circularity, means that it's not just by pushing the laggards through stronger and stronger legislation that we're going to drive the innovation sufficiently. There needs also to be carrots. And this means there needs to be more of a European initiative to support those front-running companies who want to invest in different chemicals that meet these conditionalities that Europe is setting for the future, to also help support that innovation that they have.
The policy explicitly states that REACH will have to be reopened to improve its efficacy. Which parts of REACH do you think might need to be targeted?
What I can speak to is as a agency where, you know, the European agencies are the workhorses of European policy. So our duty and our whole task is to implement what the policymakers say. And therefore, a lot of what's in the chemical strategy is changing or further developing policy. But what I can speak to is what things would changes in legislation help me in my everyday work in terms of implementation. And there, I definitely see that areas like interfaces with other pieces of legislation, which currently are not well calibrated, could be much better calibrated by changing some of the legislative obligations or changing the way the legislation works. One of the main areas where I see reopening REACH, or rather amending REACH, would have a huge advantage for ICA, would be to create a regulation on ICA itself. It's called a founding regulation, as a self-standing legislative regulation. The reason is that by doing this, you cut a lot of red tape in the functioning of our agency, and that in itself would reduce the cost of our agency, which ultimately is to the benefit of industry, who pays fees for us, and the taxpayer.
How does creating a regulation do that?
It's very administrative and technical, based on EU financial rules and how we're audited and things like that. So I won't go into grand detail, but just to illustrate is basically right now we are given tasks by each legal instrument. And right now it's five regulations and two directives. And each of them specifies how many staff and how much money we should get. And in our accounting in-house, we have to keep all this money and staff separately accounted for, which creates quite a lot of administrative work just because of this separate accounting. And this is one of many, all administrative and accounting and financial obligations that spring from the fact that we are funded from a multiplicity of different sources rather than just one source. It would bore your listeners too much if I would go into detail, more detail than that, I think.
Okay. And then you mentioned earlier that it would be good to tie REACH in with other legislation. Could you give me some examples of the other legislation that it would be helpful to connect?
Absolutely. I mean, I'll run through a couple and just illustrate with one issue with each of them, but not this is by no means comprehensive. But you take cosmetics, for example. Cosmetics is a regulation on cosmetic products. Cosmetic products are mixtures of chemicals. They, under the cosmetics regulation, have a different concept of what it means to be safe than we do in REACH. And this means that when you have a chemical that's used as a cosmetic and used in REACH, then our concepts, different concepts of what it means to be safe, clash. And that I can explain to people, but the consumer will not really understand why you can be safe as a cosmetic, but not safe in REACH, even though it's the same chemical, or the other way around. Another area is, for example, food additives. A lot of food additives are, of course, only used in food, but many are also used for other things. And this, for the other things, REACH regulates. And REACH is set up on the fundament that industry has to prove that the chemical is not safe, that the chemical is safe. And hence, we require a lot of testing. Even if we would think that it's probably safe, but if we're not sure, you have to do the test. In the food additives legislation, it's the other way around. You only go out and potentially regulate if you can demonstrate that it's not safe. And this means basically that the pieces of legislation ask different questions, which science answers. But in the answers, it could look like there are conflicts. But the conflicts is not in the science, it's simply in the way the legislation is set up. So that was two examples.
Thank you. And are there any signs in this raft of new legislation of that happening?
I mean, what I see in the strategy is that the Commission wishes to align the scientific advice strongly. And that I definitely welcome. But like I said, aligning the scientific advice is one thing. But if the questions that the legislation asks us to give advice on are conflicting or different, then it doesn't matter how much we align the scientific advice, for example, between the Food Safety Agency and ICA, it will still be conflicting because the legislation is simply not aligned. And that last bit I don't see clearly in the strategy, but maybe it's there, but it's not as clearly as the will to align the scientific advice of the agencies.
We've touched on this already, but how do you expect the new legislation might affect the way ECHA operates? I wonder if you see your role being strengthened.
My expectation would be yes, that it would be strengthened, but I'd like to just qualify a little bit what I mean with the word strengthened, because I'm not in the business of trying to expand ICA to make it bigger, better, have a bigger empire. What I think ICA has demonstrated over the last 10 years is that by taking on tasks from other pieces of legislation, which belong to the ICA core work, we can actually achieve efficiencies. So that's doing the same with less people and less money, but also achieve consistency so that the legislation is more consistent amongst themselves, which is good for industry predictability. And it's also good for the citizen because they see that at least there's a consistent line. And that's how I see that we can be strengthened, that we could get more and more tasks from other pieces of legislation in our core, where we have our core competences. And that would be effectively saving money overall and also creating consistency.
And just sort of linked to that, have you got any idea of the kind of timeline for this? How long will it take to be passed through the European system and then implemented, roughly?
This depends on which type of changes you're talking about. And I think that the strategy has a multiplicity of different changes. Effectively, there are three types of changes. They're the changes which are on the ground in implementation, where you can align with other legislation within the current legal frameworks. That's something you can do relatively fast. I mean, we've seen that over, say, a year's time, we have aligned better with the food contact material legislation on phthalates with EFSA. The next one is aligning better in the things that can be changed through comitology or committee procedures. There we normally talk about a couple of years before the commission develops a proposal and it gets adopted and takes effect, and that's relatively fast. A lot of the issues that we see in our day-to-day life can be addressed through that vehicle. But then ultimately, there's then what goes through the regular legislative procedure where Council and Parliament are involved. That takes quite a number of years. And there, I can only guess as an outsider, but if REACH was to be reopened or amended, then of course it takes a few years for the Commission to develop the proposal. And then it takes a number of years before Council and Parliament agree on it. So they're normally, if you look at many procedures in the past, we look at a 5-year span or more before the legislation actually takes effect.
How do you think the agency can help the EU to achieve the objectives in this new policy?
I definitely think our main raison d'être is implement legislation, which means what you said nicely in the introduction, you know, develop IT tools so that everybody can implement or do their tasks much more efficiently. We give guidance to economic operators, to industry on how they best can fulfill their objectives. And then we give scientific advice to the Commission. And that's what we can do well. And that's where I think by concentrating on those areas and basically expanding that competence to cover more and more pieces of legislation, I think that's the way that we can help the EU achieve the objectives from what we're doing today. There are two other elements where I think we could help. One is in terms of defining what is a sustainable chemical, which effectively is what chemical do we want in 2050? I think we have a lot of technical competence that can be used not in isolation to define a sustainable chemical, but contribute to that discussion. And then finally, if we recognize, which I definitely do, that chemical industry needs to undergo a significant deep change and also in the direction of innovating new chemicals, new processes to produce new chemicals, then I think we can help in a partnership with our competences on safety to help industry sort through which chemicals are the best candidates for the Europe we want in 2050 from a health and environment perspective. In practical terms, you know, industry would come up in their in the area that they know best. For example, in low energy production of a chemical that technically can be recycled easily in a material and has a good purpose. And then we would say, well, of those 10 that you have found that would suit your purpose of the chemical, we think these three are probably the least toxic and therefore the best ones for you to go forward. And that type of partnership would basically mean that we use our EU competence a little bit more targeted and dividing up in order to speed up the innovation process. So that's like that's three main areas where I see that ICA can contribute to meeting the EU objectives.
That last one, that partnership idea with the industry, would that be something new or do you do that already?
That would be something totally new. At the moment, let's say we have informal exchanges with industry and companies, of course, in their work in actually trying to meet their legal obligations, where we do give them very targeted advice. But this year would be a very new, let's say, application of our competences. It would effectively be, you know, we would be a service center on hazards of chemicals to help promote the right innovation in Europe.
And of course, the industry will also be looking for practical advice and help on implementing any changes. I mean, I'm old enough to, I'm old enough to remember when REACH was first implemented and how a lot of people were up in arms because the REACH IT system wasn't working and so on. But I'm sure you'll have all that sorted out in good time. And you've, you know, probably learned lessons from the past as well.
Absolutely. I mean, we are a learning organization. We make mistakes, and you bet we've made a lot of them. But I also think that we've learned a lot from them. And for example, on REACH IT, the early development issues, problems, obstacles, mistakes. I think now we're in a system where we're creating databases for various uses. I mean, the latest one is this waste database, but we also created a poison center database, basically from scratch in 2 years, simply because we have learned from all these mistakes from the past and now actually believe to know how to create a chemical database.
Just finally, how encouraged are you that the new legislation will accelerate environmental improvements in Europe?
I'm very optimistic that it can do that. I think that we have a unique situation in Europe where of both competence but also will to achieve a common goal in 2050. With the strategy, we have a number of the elements that is needed to get there, and I think that in itself gives me a lot of positive feeling that we can manage. There are elements. I mean, we have to be careful or be sure that we also stimulate the innovation side of our industry sufficiently, that we support them sufficiently, that we give them legal certainty, so it's worth investing in radically new chemical solutions. But that's also recognized in the strategy. But let's say, I'm very encouraged, but we have to be careful and definitely reassess every step of the way whether we're doing the right thing and learn from our mistakes as we move forward.
Bjorn, thank you very much for joining me today. If you'd like to learn more about the products and services that we have on offer, visit icis.com.